This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2019, held at Faith Builders from July 29 through August 2.
So welcome to Building Writing Skills. If you are in the wrong breakout, hey, feel free to get up and leave, because I know some breakout spots moved just this morning. You might have heard about it. So, building writing skills, I'm glad and delighted to see so many of you are interested in this topic. And let's begin by talking, welcome Juan in, let's begin by talking about what it's about just a little bit. So you may have noticed on the description of the breakout that it's going to be about writing sentences, paragraphs, and reports. What I want to make clear is that this is not going to be about creative writing or composition class so much. I want to say a few things about that right now because I'm not going to go into that. So we're not talking about helping children write stories, and I have a viewpoint on this, which is somewhat controversial, so it's interesting, hopefully, to you. And I'm open to your pushback. But I think that teachers feel good in creative writing class when their students write creatively and express themselves. And so while it makes teachers feel good, I'm not sure that creative writing generates, especially in the lower grades, we're focusing on today, grades 1 through 4 in particular, I don't think it generates quality writing, necessarily, in students, nor does it prepare to do a lot of creative writing. It doesn't prepare well the students for the rigorous writing tasks they'll face later. So, my advice, if you want to write stories with your students, think about using mentor texts, ones, books that model the writing techniques you're using. And you can go online and look up mentor texts and get ideas for writing with mentor texts. I do one book to suggest, and that is this one, Craft Lessons, Teaching Writing K-8 by Ralph Fletcher and Joel Cornelucci. And maybe this would be a good time to pause and say this. If you take a look at your handout, you'll notice that any resources I mentioned, hopefully, the key ones, are on the back page 4 of your handout. So you don't need to necessarily write them down, but you've got them there for reference. So that's my suggestion if you want to get the writing stories. My second suggestion is that you consider using what I call bare books, B-A-R-E books, which are just white hardcover books. These come from Treetop Publishing, I believe. And they're just white hardcover books with blank pages. And what I do with these is I have my students write stories, kind of like they write a picture book. They get ready to write a picture book and we go through the process. And then when they've written their story, I get mother volunteers to type up the stories for me, and then my students cut apart the typewritten text and they glue it into their book, maybe a sentence or two in each page, and then they draw pictures at the top of each page. And then they feel like they're published authors and they experience so much delight in writing. But again, it's not the primary focus of my writing class, nor is it the primary focus of our class here today to talk about this more in depth. You know, I would say this. Don't spend too much time on creative writing in the lower grades. Instead, think about reading good literature to them. Stories that stir up their imaginations. Stories that produce healthy imaginations in children. Traditional fairy tales, folk tales, fables that have stood the test of hundreds of thousands of years. And read them recent pieces of literature that I did too, like don't miss Charlotte's Web. Good writers have read good literature, so expose your students to good literature. Now, if I were to suggest a particular writing program, I will tell you one that I'm curious about, and that is Andrew Padewa's Teaching Writing Structure and Style. It's a program that I think goes through first grade through high school, not sure. But I think it could be a good program if you're looking for something. It's one I'm considering using, but probably won't use yet this year. I'm just exploring it at this time. Now, what we are going to talk about, though, this workshop is also not about following a particular writing program. So how many of you have a writing program that's integrated in your language arts? For example, maybe you teach CLE and there are writing components in that program. Raise your hand. Yes, so for many of you that is true. And for myself, I'm just using not a pre-made program. I simply teach writing skills through the number of methods I'm going to show you today. So you see that we're going to follow these steps. We're going to teach our students to write sentences, write paragraphs, and then write reports. That's how I think about it. Before we move into that, though, you've got a prompt on your handout that's different from the prompt up here, but take either one. Think about it either from the vantage point of yourself as a student when you were in school, or perhaps yourself as a teacher, and ask yourselves, do your students enjoy writing? What's easy, what's difficult? So let's just take a little time and think back, because sometimes thinking back to our students' responses or our own responses to writing when we were in school can be helpful as we shape our writing programs today. Go ahead and turn to your neighbor in just a bit here and talk to them about that. At the end, when I see things are wrapping up, I'm going to do a countdown, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, much more slowly than that. And if you could just finish your thought with your neighbor and then join me in the countdown, that would help me out. Thank you. Turn and talk to your neighbor.
My students found it quite interesting if I gave them two words and just to expand on that.
Mm-hmm.
One time I did abandoned house.
Mm-hmm.
They can take it in any which direction they wanted,
mm-hmm.
but to give them two words, it just helped them and they enjoyed it. They had a 200 word assignment done in very little time.
Abandoned house. Don't those two words just stir up the imagination and fill many directions? So two very carefully chosen words can help to direct your students while still giving them a lot of freedom. Great idea.
One thing I found is they often have a really hard time. Like, they know they want to write about, you know, camping in Alaska, but they don't know how to start. Like,
yes.
They're just not sure what their first sentence should be.
Yes. Yes, that's a difficulty. We're going to talk about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing how to start is, I think, one of the key issues students face in writing. I faced it. My students face it.
I know for me, when I had to write reports in school, I would do a little bit of research, and then I had so many thoughts that they were so jumbled, it was hard for me to sort out what was worth writing about and what I needed to take out.
Yeah, so it's so difficult when you're doing report writing to decide what I'm going to keep, what's going to go, and what's important, what's not. Hopefully we'll
and
get
how
there.
To organize it.
And how to organize
it.
Yes. Yeah, so we're going to talk about that specifically in the paragraph writing. And you're onto something there. We can find methods to deal with that issue. We are doing our students a great service. Well, so like we said, many of you have preset curriculums. You have a plan to follow. And I'm hoping that what I offer today gives you ways to think about this preset curriculum so you can teach it more effectively. Or some of you may be teaching writing as an add-on, the thing that you sort of do on your own. How many of you think that might be your case this year, where you will, whatever you do in writing, you'll make up some of the lessons yourself? Okay. So I'm hoping this will also give you some direction and framework in which to plan your writing for the year. Whatever we do in writing, we need to do it with purpose and with integrity, calling our students to integrity in writing. So we're going to start with writing sentences. And so I'm talking more about expository writing here, not so much descriptive or narrative writing, not story writing as much as expository. But starting with writing sentences, excuse me. First, we're going to start with a word to us as teachers. There are three places I think we should check our knowledge and skill level as teachers. And these are, I think we should know for ourselves the capitalization rules. We should be able to recognize sentence fragments, and we should recognize run-on sentences. And some of you are sitting here thinking, yes, I can do those things. Let's move on. Well, due to my work here at Faith Builders, I've had opportunity regularly to read the writing of lots of teachers and to see the teaching of beginning teachers, and I've noticed these are areas of weakness for beginning elementary teachers. So we're going to take a little time on this. So let's talk first about the capitalization rules. Now, the common teacher error is that they capitalize when it's not necessary. Prime example, when you write vocabulary words on your board in a list, do you capitalize each and every one? I hope not. That is going to be confusing to students. Only capitalize the proper nouns. Do you know how to recognize proper nouns? Do you know which ones need to be capitalized? If you don't, go back to a grammar book and get those rules set in your head. The second thing I think we need to think about is sentence fragments. And I'm going to show you some sentence fragments mixed in with complete sentences. Now, sentence fragments are tricky because they masquerade. They look like they're a complete sentence because they have capitals, they have periods, but they're not a complete thought. So we're going to test ourselves here. And what I want you to do, I'm going to read a sentence out loud. I'm going to ask for you to give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down, just like we would do it in my classroom when I wanted to check on my students' knowledge of something. So put your fist on your chest like this, because in my classroom I want my students thinking and responding for themselves and not imitating those around them. So we keep our thumbs up, thumbs down close to our bodies so that we're less likely just to do what everybody else is doing. Okay. So fist on your chest, and it's complete sentence, thumbs up. I ate lunch. Yes, that has a subject and a verb. It's complete thought. I is the subject, ate is the verb. Okay, even though it's very short, it's a complete sentence. Number two, fist on chest. Because this car was in the shop. Yes, that is not a complete sentence. Because his car was in his shop, what did he do? The thought is not completed. Number three, fist on chest. When you finally take the test. Right, not a complete sentence. And number four, so you can go to school. Yes, that is also a sentence fragment. And number five, come with me. Complete sentence. Even though there is no subject, the subject is understood. You come with me. You is the understood subject. Okay, so if that was at all tricky for you, do your students a favor and study a third through sixth grade vocabulary. Grammar book, or look up sentence fragments online, and just make sure this is solid in your mind. Now, here's an easy trick. Tell your students, if you're teaching grades 1 through 4, tell your students that it is against the law in your classroom to use because, or when, or so, or after. You can outlaw common words that they might use to start a sentence, because those will create sentence fragments, because those are subordinated conjunctions, the connecting words used in the middle of a sentence or at the beginning to show that two thoughts are going to be related. And most of your students are not adept at creating long sentences beginning with because. And so if they create a sentence beginning with because, it's probably a sentence fragment. So I remember that my teacher outlawed because and so and that when I was in first and second grade. And I remember how hard it was for me to do without those words. It was tricky. How many of you had that memory as a student as well in your school? A few of you, okay. I'm forever grateful to those teachers who insisted that you may not start a sentence with because. Because I was not at that point able, excuse the sentence fragment, to create a complete sentence. I needed that structure. This is a place for you as a teacher to be old-fashioned, to be firm, and uphold to your standards. So, that was sentence fragments. The final thing to think about here is run-on sentences. And let's first assess your knowledge here. So I've got three sentences, and two of them are run-on. And my question for you, don't answer yet, is which sentence is not a run-on? Now, to give me the answer, you're going to hold up your finger to indicate the number for the sentence, one, two, or three, which sentence is not a run-on. Ready? One, two, three, go. Okay, yes, number two is not a run-on sentence. So a run-on is when you have two independent clauses that are in one sentence but not joined correctly. For example, frogs have long tongues. That is independent, can stand by itself. They use them to catch the prey. Also independent, can stand by itself. So it should be separated somehow. We'll talk in a minute about how you could fix this run-on. The way I talk about it to my third graders is I say, we've got two sentences squished together to make one sentence. You can't do that. You've got to separate the two sentences or do something to join them correctly. So how could we correct this run-on? You're probably already thinking about possibilities. Here are a few. So this probably, I would simply not worry about smooth, flowing language with my first and second graders or third and fourth graders, really. I just tell them to separate them into two sentences of the period. That's perfectly fine. Maybe they would want to use a comma and, that would be fine. A semicolon would indicate that the two clauses are related, so you could use a semicolon if the two clauses are related in thought. Or you could use a connecting word like which. Frogs have long tongues, which they use to catch their prey. So those are ways you could fix a run-on. Now again, if you had any difficulty with this, if it wasn't second nature, just get solid on this content. Find a source and learn about run-on sentences. And once you can say, yes, I can capitalize, I can identify and fix fragments, and run-ons, then you're ready to teach. You're ready to model to those first and second graders what a complete sentence looks like. So now let's talk about the how. So how do you do this? And I'm going to offer two or three hows for you. The first thing I would say is give them lots of opportunity to speak in complete sentences. I remember saying to a first grader, I said, say it in a sentence. And he said in response, well, in all honesty, he wasn't sure. He said, what's a sentence? And I think I might have told him, a sentence is a complete thought. But I realized that that did not clarify the matter for him at all. And I realized in that moment that the best definitions of a sentence and the best explanations for a sentence were not going to help this child. Instead, your youngest students need to hear lots of good examples of sentences, and they need the teacher to use that word sentence and say, yes, that was a good sentence. They need lots of examples. Your students need you to, when they don't speak in sentences, they need your help to formulate their thoughts into complete sentences. So here's where the traditional value of show and tell, how many of you do show and tell in your schools? Yeah, that still happens in some places. Or maybe they each talk about their weekend on a Monday morning. Okay, how many of you do that? A number of you do. And that's valuable because both of those activities build a sense of belonging in your classroom. But it's also valuable because it helps your students to practice communicating complete sentences. Now, if they're not sure how to create a complete sentence, they don't know what a sentence is, give them a sentence starter. Just tell them, if they don't know how to say it, how to express their thoughts, just tell them, say, this weekend off. And yes, I'm going to pause and say this. I apologize on your handouts. There's not much space to write about sentences. You may need an extra paper or something. I didn't leave adequate space for that. So, or if they're talking about their weekend and you don't want them to ramble on and on and on and on, you could say, today I want you to tell me about one thing from your weekend, and I want you to use this sentence starter. The best part was when. Or, if you have a show and tell, you could require them to start by saying, this is an old rusty nail I found in my father's barn. So on and so forth. Now, in our Monday morning share time in third and fourth grade, we're still working on sentence structure and making sure that they're talking complete sentences. But we're going a little beyond that to correct usage rules. For example, a common mistake for students to make is to say something like, me and my brother went deer spotting this weekend, and we seen 50 deer. So they're used to being corrected. As soon as me and my brother comes out of their mouth, I say, "My brother and I, please repeat that." And they learn that they will be corrected each and every time they make an error, and eventually it becomes kind of a class joke, and they begin to catch themselves and grin sheepishly and correct themselves and correct each other as well. So give your students lots of opportunity to talk and complete sentences with sentence starters and corrections. When they speak incorrectly, go ahead and give them the correct form and expect them, don't miss this step, expect them to repeat it correctly. Without that step, the information can go whoosh. Secondly, when you're doing sentence writing, give them real life opportunities. So, I'm going to give you two examples of this. When I was teaching grades 1 and 2, which I did for 10 years, for each student in my classroom, and I had as many as 18 students in my classroom at that point, we would create a birthday book. This is a book to which each child would contribute one page. And we compiled this little book and made it to, and gave it to them on their birthday. Now, each child, on their page, they were supposed to write a letter to the birthday child. So they needed the format of a letter. They needed to start with a capital, Dear Billy Bob, comma. These were sacred elements of their letter that they could not miss, okay? And then they needed to write several sentences, and at the end they needed to use a closing, like sincerely or with love, and it needed to be capitalized, and we need a comma, and then we need their name below. So already they were learning the format of a friendly letter within the context of also writing sentences to their friends. Now, with 18 students in the classroom, we had to start at the very beginning of the year, of course. And it was a little challenging that they couldn't read and they were already supposed to create the sentences. So I gave them sentences sort of like, "I'm glad you're in my class because," or "I enjoy when you," or "you're good at," or "I hope you." And those sentence starters helped them. And although the first few sessions in the year were kind of painful, they became really good at this task, especially when they repeated it 18 times in the year. Now, here was the thing they really enjoyed. When they were done with their page, they could decorate the page. But the catch was that before they decorated, I would look it over and make sure that every element was there, every sentence was complete, no sentence fragments, no capitalization errors, no runs. And then they could pull out their crayons and markers. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of strong motivation to write good sentences. Now, I don't expect each and every one of you to go back to your classrooms and incorporate this activity. I'm sharing this idea, though, to spur your thoughts. As first and second grade teachers, one of your jobs is to teach sentence writing. And you're going to need to find ways to give lots of practice and accountability for this. So, start thinking, where am I going to have them practice a lot? Where am I going to hold them to this standard? Because you may not be able to in every single piece of their work. But where are you going to do it? The way I do it in third and fourth grade, sometimes I wish for reading workbooks where we had complete sentence activities because that would help us work on that regularly. It would be helpful. But since we don't, I have to find another place to insist on complete sentences. And what I do is I create reading tests, and there's a section where complete sentences are required. And before they're allowed to hand that test to me, every answer in the complete sentence section needs to be correctly capitalized, no fragments, no runs, nothing like that allowed. So where you require these complete sentences will depend on your situation, but keep some important elements in mind here. First, you're going to need to make complete sentences a requirement somewhere. And second, you're going to need to make it a regular requirement, something they learn to expect. And third, you're going to need to create a system to keep them accountable. You could hand the papers back the next day and say, "Please correct your sentences," but it's more powerful to give instant feedback and accountability. So where in the school day would you have time as a teacher to immediately hand it back? That would be a whole class activity for you multi-grade classroom teachers, I think. Okay. I feel like I went on a long time about complete sentences. As you can tell, I'm kind of passionate about this subject. My students know this too. And you can't miss that step. You need to work on complete sense of your classroom. But let's go into paragraph writing because that's your job, I think, as third and fourth grade teachers and on up to teach basic paragraph writing. We might start by introducing it in second grade. Now, I will confess, I've had varying levels of success with teaching paragraph writing. In fact, lots of times I didn't feel like I did it very well. But I found that I've been more effective when I've used the David Dye method. And that's been recently published in the book. So where I found it was in a PDF online for free. And that's the source I'm working from today. But I'm not sure if you'll be able to go online and find it for free anymore. So you may actually have to get the book. I think it might be a worthwhile book to get. But let me outline that David Dye method steps. So, in David Dye's method, he says first you should assess and your students write, tell them to write a paragraph with no instruction to see if they can write a paragraph. Give them a topic and have them write a paragraph. And then assess with a rubric that he offers in his book. Now, I skip this step because I already know that my third graders can't write paragraphs and I don't feel like it's worth my time and their sweat and tears to try that activity. It might be worth it if she's a little older. So I go straight to step two, where he introduces the five parts of a good paragraph. And he says you should have your students tell you what the five parts of a good paragraph are. So I'm going to, in just a minute, have you tell me what you think they might be. We'll keep with David Dye's ideas, but yours, if you don't align, are probably also correct. Five parts to a good paragraph. What would you say they are? Give me one.
Topic sentence.
Topic sentence. Yes, David, I agree with you. This is not a title. I will not capitalize that word. This is a title. I will capitalize every word there. Okay? Correct capitalization. What else?
Say it with the theme.
Yes. And the way he says it is he says one main idea. You want to think his samples are capitalized. Doing that. And what else? What do you need at the end of your paragraph? A closing sentence. Now think more about how long your paragraph should be.
5 to 7 sentences.
Yes, he says 5 to 7 sentences. I don't always hold my students to this. They're young. If we can get 4 sentences out, we're doing well. Okay, what else? This is about format.
Let me draw a picture and see if you've ever drawn this on your chalkboard.
Indent the first line. Yes, please indent the first line. And then in addition, he says, correct capitalization. And punctuation. So those are David Dye's 5 elements of a good paragraph. And step 3 in teaching these, after introducing them like I just did now, is to have the students memorize them. And David Dye says that each of these activities might take a whole lesson, okay? Or you might combine 2 or 3, depending on how fast you conclude, but we're talking about lots and lots of lessons to get us to the point where we're actually writing the paragraph. So on day 3, you might be looking at memorizing the parts of this paragraph. And he does this by treating his students with candy. So he starts with a blank board, and he sees if they can give him one of the 5 elements. And if they say one, then he gives them candy. So that works well for him, I guess. Another method, though, and actually, 1 year I did that, and it was successful. My students, it was the beginning of the year, and they weren't very excited about paragraphs. That day, I think, and I asked, what are the 5 parts of a good paragraph? We've gone over them the day before. And they kind of looked at me like they didn't really care. And then one of them offered one, and I pulled out a piece of candy and tossed it at him, and you can guess what happened. All the students had lots of thoughts at that point. And they were just wildly guessing what the five cards might be. So David dies onto something. Now, to go on to the next section, which is to teach the paper setup. Sorry, I had to turn that off. But the next step is going to be to teach the paper setup, and I'm going to show you that using my old-fashioned overhead projector. So, for this, you're going to want to turn to the page in your hand that looks a little bit like this. Magic happens. This is what the students, he trains students to put on their paper. So, let me put some things on my paper and just go ahead and copy them on your paper. They might already be on the top of the paper in a paragraph. Pre-write. Put your name and date up in the corner. Or wherever you want your students to do it. Now, by the way, this pre-write system is a game changer. This is brilliant. I think David Dye says that his students use it from third grade all the way through high school. What you do next for this astonishing, brilliant idea is you write, now it doesn't sound amazing right away, but you write one main idea here. I guess to remind yourself about this part. And then you write your one main idea below. Now, we are going to do a pre-write about writing a paragraph. Okay, so our whole paragraph is going to be about what we've just been talking about. Now, what do you think could be the one main idea of our paragraph?
There are 5 steps to writing a good paragraph.
There are 5 steps to writing a paragraph. I'm going to write a shorter one. That's a great one. I'm going to write a shorter one for the sake of my time here. Writing a paragraph is, because I can't spell here. Writing a paragraph is easy. But I think that was a stronger topic sentence than the one I picked here. Okay, so you have your topic. Without your students even realizing it, you get your students to construct it. Topic sentence. Now the next step is the webbing step. And this is where I think the magic happens. I should have drawn this just a little low on my paper, I realized just now. I've got a line or two down. Now, fix that, it's bothering me. How many of you would need to fix that as well if you were up here? Yes, okay, thought so. So, now we're at the brainstorming stage, and what we do is we think, what are the supporting ideas for our topic sentence? There are 5 steps to writing a good paragraph. Or writing a paragraph is easy. Go ahead and give me one. And try to give them out of order if you could.
You need a closing sentence.
Closing sentence, thank you. So then, whenever I write on the board, my students write on their paper. Another one?
5 to 7 sentences.
5 to 7 sentences. Notice that we're not writing complete sentences. We're just writing words or phrases to remind us what we're going to write about. These are supporting details to our topic sentence. And if what else could we do? Good. What else? No, we're reviewing, aren't we?
helping sentence.
Thank you. I normally have to hit my overhead printer at some point so it stops rattling. What else?
One main idea?
Yes. Now, our next step, which is the stroke of brilliance, I think, is that then we organize our thoughts right here on our web. So, this is going to be sentence one in our paragraph. Which one do you think would make a good sentence two? Which one would be first in your explanation? That's probably what I would say to my students. Which one do you think would make a good sentence two? There could be several answers here, but... Boys and girls, I think we should tell in the order that you will write your sentence, you tell how you do it. So which thing would come first?
Yes,
topic sentence. Or one main idea, really, either one can come first. But, so that was number one, the topic sentence was. So now we're going to write about the topic sentence in number two. That's going to be our second sentence. And number three is going to be probably one main idea. What do you think will be number four?
Probably five to seven
sentences. Number five. Maybe the indent, the capitalization, punctuation. And number six, of course, you're going to write about your closing sentence. Oh, and then after that, see, this paragraph is getting too long in third grade. But anyway, after that, you would need to finish with a closing sentence. So I'm going to write 7CS. It's a little confusing there, but anyway. Then you're ready to write your paragraph. And probably the first time I do this, I would model it to my students, and we would write the paragraph together. So let's write our first sentence on our paragraph, students. And we're going to start immediately with Laura Webb. And what are we going to remember to do today? We're going to
indent.
So to indent, use two fingers. I make sure we make a nice, big, clear space at the beginning of our paragraph. And then we begin writing. What's our first sentence, class? Good. Go ahead and make sure you indent and write that sentence. At this point, I would actually take time to write the entire sentence up here so you can copy it. And I would be walking around to see if they included indenting. And you'd be surprised how many of them don't indent, despite my great clarity. I think. And then we move on and we do number two. So number two, let's make this into a sentence. Number two is going to need to be about a topic sentence, so who can make a sentence about that? Let's start with we, or you. You
begin with a topic sentence.
Begin with a topic sentence. Begin with. By the way, these little icons on the side are supposed to help me remember to write on every other line, but I still forget. But if I, sometimes my students like to write on every other line, so I give them that guide. You begin with a topic sentence. Now go ahead. Probably in third grade, we would write the entire paragraph together, just like we're doing right now. But for now, pretend that you're much older than that, and go ahead and write the rest of the paragraph. So, we've used sentence two, so now you need to use sentence three. One main, your next sentence needs to be about one main idea. I'm going to give you a minute just to work on that. Reflect on what it's doing. How will this activity support your learners in your classroom? How would this support your learners? keep writing the paragraph. At some point, you're going to have to instruct your students on the closing sentence, and we didn't talk at all about that, so I'm going to just briefly talk about it with you. So I tell my students that a good paragraph is like a hamburger. How many of you have seen this idea before? Okay. And so your good paragraph is going to begin and end with the same main idea. You're just going to say it in different ways. See how by the top looks a little fatter, and then by the bottom it's a little different, but you've got a bun on your side. So the same way with your paragraph, you need to start with your topic sentence, and your closing sentence needs to restate what you said in your topic sentence, but it can say it in a different way. So who has an example of a good closing sentence for this paragraph? I'm curious if somebody has one.
It is not hard to write a paragraph.
It is not hard to write a paragraph. I would consider that a very good closing sentence in third and fourth grade. You don't have to be very original. All you have to do is get your thoughts on paper. Good. Okay, so we practice writing a paragraph, and you're seeing, I think, how much support is needed as you're teaching paragraph writing. How many of you have taught paragraph writing in the past? Just curious. Okay. How many of you have found that lots of support is needed? It's true. Okay, good. So it's not just my students. Now, I'm going to jump back to an idea I forgot to share. When we were on the topic of memorizing the five parts of a sentence, the other thing David Dye says, even before you do the paragraph pre-write and start them with writing their first paragraphs, you could show them how a paragraph is set up by having them draw a picture. Now, this seems kind of extreme until you watch your students and realize how many of them don't understand the form of a complete paragraph, even though you've talked about it, even though you've probably shown them examples in books. You maybe put up an example from a book and had them circle the paragraphs. Maybe you found them in your science book and had them find the topic sentence and the closing sentence. Even so, understanding the form and what a paragraph looks like is not intuitive for many children. So you could have your students review this by drawing with you a paragraph. So we're going to draw a paragraph together today. And you might have to find a face on your paper somewhere, maybe an extra piece of paper or something, and you often do not have papers. It won't take a lot of space. But let's draw a paragraph. And I probably should actually have lines for this. Yes. Do that. There we go. Now, to draw a picture of a paragraph, I'm going to show where I begin. Where do I begin, class? On the left or the right? On the left. Do I start right at the edge?
No.
Oh, no. I need to indent. So I'm going to draw my first sentence. And it's going to start right about here. I have two fingers. And then the squiggly line represents my sentence. And at the end of my sentence, I need a period. This first sentence is called my
topic sentence.
So I'm going to write TS for topic sentence. There's my topic sentence. Now my next sentences give me supporting details for my topic sentence. They continue the same idea. So I'm going to draw another sentence. And I forgot my
period.
I guess you could even demonstrate showing how it's moving too, right? And how many sentences like this should I draw?
Five sentences.
I've got one, two, three. This is the capital and the end of the period as well. Four, five. Go. And my last sentence, I'm going to make six sentences because I want to do extra. There. Oh, it's a very long sentence. There we go. And my last sentence needs to also end the period, and it needs to be a what? Closing sentence. I'm going to write CS there. Now, I could have been a little more colorful with that. That's kind of a poor example. But there you have an example of an activity you can do with your students even before you write the paragraph. Go ahead and draw the paragraph. That, again, is a David Dye method. I'm just curious on your reflections. What would you say about this method? What could this do for your students? Particularly as you felt yourself writing a paragraph.
easier to do as a group, I think, having a clearly outlined set up of what comes next.
Yes. Yes.
It would help them to think about format instead of trying to also think of ideas at the same time.
Thank you. Writing a paragraph is complex. You have to think about format and ideas all at the same time, probably another number of things. And so it sort of separates out the different things you have to think about and supports them while they're learning.
It gives them a lot of support so they can focus more on what they're writing instead of how to write it.
Gives them support so they can focus more on what they're writing
instead of like what format they need to write it in or like how to write it.
Yes. Yes. Well said. I think it also takes away the question, what should I write next? And if your students still struggle because you saw we didn't have complete sentences in our brainstorm, if they're still struggling with formulating a complete sentence, go ahead and give them a sentence starter. It's okay. Give them all the support they need as they begin writing sentences. So, just now, I did step 5 of the Adaptive Method. So after the paper setup, with that brainstorming section, that writing section. Then you write a paragraph together. We sort of start on that, but we didn't do the whole thing together. And your first time through, you would focus on the pre-write part of it. The second time you would do the activity, you would then focus on the paragraph writing and perhaps make it more independent at that point. That's the David Dye method. And that's all I'm going to say about paragraphs, I think. So let's go to reports. Now, I told you I taught first and second for 10 years, and then I moved to third and fourth grade. And I had heard the drill before that. First and second grade, you teach them sentences, writing complete sentences. And then in third and fourth grade, you work on paragraphs. And you begin having them write reports, because you want to prepare them for the tasks of upper elementary and high school, where they're going to be writing research papers. So, okay, yes, I need to have my students write reports, but I had no idea how to go about this. And I think my first project or two was a disaster, to be honest, because I did not have enough support and made it too hard. And so when you teach reports, make it attainable for them. And that does not look like the kind of poster project a 5th through 8th grader could do, like a kind that's out in the hallway. Don't try that kind. That's overwhelming. So here are a couple of appropriate starting places you could consider for your classroom. You could think about a poster that is already split up for them and has the categories, and I'm sorry you can't see, but these are bird posters, and each child shows a separate bird. And they wrote about the range and habitat, the field marks, the behavior, an interesting fact, the food, and whatever else they wanted to write about the bird of their choice. What I liked about this was that it did push them on two elements of good writing, the kinds of things you need to do when you write papers in upper grades. It taught them to find key information, and it taught them to write in your own words and not plagiarize. Now, I'll just quickly outline the steps I used. So first of all, I either had them go on a website or I printed off papers from a website that they looked at. So that was their text. Then I had another piece of paper on which they webbed their information. They didn't copy whole sentences from the dictionary or whole sentences from the text. Instead, they just wrote keywords on the web, sort of like we did when we were doing our paragraph pre-write. Okay? Then, not even getting out the original text they had used, only using their webbed information, they then took that and they had to put that information back into complete sentences in their report. This process allowed them to write in their own words without plagiarizing. Otherwise, your students are going to just copy wholesale from the dictionary. I mean, the dictionary says it's better anyway, right? So you might as well use those words. But you don't want them to do that. You don't want them to plagiarize. So that's why I call that step. First, that text that we read, and then we webbed it on another piece of paper, then we took that webbed information and put it into a report back in the sentences. You can find this project on the doc if you look on Doc for Learning, and search for bird reports or something like that, and I do offer this an electronic copy of this. I think I have it back here. Covered up. I'm sorry. What I am going to pull out at this point is another kind of poster report you could do. And that is, this one from Scholastic. It's called the Biography Poster Report. So what students need to do in my class, we need to read two biographies about somebody. So one child might study Abraham Lincoln, read two books about him, one being often a picture book. And then they need to summarize about that person here. And again, we use an intermediate step of webbing first before, and not just copying straight from the dictionary. I'm going to have a picture of this. Yes. And so one of the things, when you buy this from Scholastic, if you choose to buy it, they do offer a filled-out form, which is great, because then you can show your students this is how it should look when you're done. And that is motivating for students. So that's why I really like this. I think I got 30 for about $7 or $8. It wasn't that expensive. Another idea I saw, I think at Shalom, but I'm not sure, it's at Shalom Mennonite School in Lancaster, but it's where I saw this idea. This is a very simple report. The teacher had obviously had each student choose a planet, and they just did it on a piece of construction paper, so it's not that big. And they had a picture and some, you know, a title, and then just three facts about the planet. And if you look at the content about the planets, you get the idea that maybe the teacher asked them some questions. Does this happen to be yours?
This is sixth grade.
This is sixth grade.
I think. Okay. And it is our school because it recognizes student names.
Okay. Oops, they didn't take those off. Do you know how the teacher prompted them to do this report?
I'm not sure, actually.
Uh-huh. No. But as I looked at these two, I thought, maybe the teacher said something like this. What would you like on this planet? Why should people come visit this planet? Which gives an interesting twist. When you come to Venus, bring marshmallows, hamburgers, hot dogs, and anything else you want to bring along to roast on top of Venus and the volcanoes. Okay? So the prompts, I think, spurred some interesting writings. If you think about your prompts and the questions you ask, it can be helpful. So it sounds a little bit like the sixth graders are telling what you want to come and see, what's there. So you're trying to get tourists to come. Maybe it's like a tourist advertisement or something like that. So I thought that was a great idea for a simple report. Again, they just look up the information and write some things in their own words. So helpful for students. Okay, I already talked about this one. Here is one comment about this picture. My students get very excited about reports when I say, okay, you're far enough now on this thing that you can work anywhere in the classroom you like. And so, that's how some students choose to work at that point. I think I'm going to close this up by saying about reports again that I teach them to find key information when they do reports, and the way I support them is I might give them two questions to answer. So for example, every other fall, we do a report on rocks, which isn't the most easy topic to research. I don't know why I do it, but that's what I do. And so my one question about rocks is, how do you identify these rocks? Where are they found? And so my students create a whole web just about that. And my second question is something like, what are the uses of this rock? Then my students end up with two pages of web information. And then when they go to write their reports, they end up with two different paragraphs because they've covered two topics. And I love it because they're engaged. They love learning about one particular rock and telling everybody else about it, becoming an expert on this topic. And they're also learning to read and absorb information and then write about it, which is exactly what I want to do. In addition, for the first time ever, they've written two complete paragraphs in a row on one topic. That is preparing them, I think, for the kind of absorption they're required to have when they read history and science upper grades, which is stepping stones for their research papers. And I just think it's a valuable activity we can do with our students. Now, another skill. A lot of these each year, I try to, if I can fit them in, do two reports a year, that's about it. And sometimes I'm not as involved as what I described. I'm usually run out of time. But try this year, do at least one report sometime in your school year, see what happens. I'd like to end by saying that when we teach our students to write, we're teaching them to think. Think about what Winnie the Pooh tells us about this. He said when you're very, very old, right? And you think of things, you find sometimes that a thing which seems very thinnish inside you is quite different when it gets out into the open and has other people looking at it. And when students write, when students write them and put their thoughts on paper, suddenly they have a chance to evaluate their thoughts and to fix their ideas, and to strengthen their ideas, and to provide supporting details for their ideas. So when you teach students to write, you teach them to think. Thank you for coming today.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.